This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Hey folks, thanks for listening. We are so glad you joined us today. It's going to be a great show. Hey, real quick, we would love you forever if you would just take a quick sec and subscribe to the show or leave us a review on the podcast listening platform of your choice. Super interesting topic today. We'll be talking through the optimal way to progress from race distance to race distance, answering questions like, how can I tell if I'm ready for a longer distance race? Should I throw a half Ironman into the training cycle of a full Ironman? If I do a full Ironman as my first ever triathlon, am I totally insane? Lots of great questions to be talked through today, and joining us for this conversation is Coach John Mayfield. A successful Ironman athlete himself, John leads TriDot's Athlete Services, Ambassador, and Coaching Programs. He has coached hundreds of athletes ranging from first-timers to Kona qualifiers and professional triathletes. John has been using TriDot since 2010 and coaching with TriDot since 2012. John, how's it going?
Very good, my man.
Glad to hear it. Next up is pro triathlete and coach Elizabeth James. Elizabeth came to the sport from a soccer background and quickly rose through the triathlon ranks using TriDot, from a beginner to top age grouper to professional triathlete. She's a Kona and Boston Marathon qualifier who has coached triathletes with TriDot since 2014. Elizabeth, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Andrew. I love being here.
I'm Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people, and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up question, settle in for our main set topic, and then wind things down with our cool down. Lots of good stuff. Let's get to it.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
Yeah, sure, triathlon is the greatest form of racing on the face of planet Earth. We admit it, we're biased. But triathlon's race form supremacy doesn't mean that other types of racing are not intriguing enough to merit our time and attention. Standalone swim, bike, and run races are obviously the most mainstream, but things like Spartan races, Tough Mudders, Ragnar runs, and the swim run series are popular amongst athletes looking for a different sort of challenge. So the question today to get us warmed up, John and Elizabeth, if you were to register for a less mainstream, non-triathlon type of race, what event kind of piques your interest the most? And John, I'll have you go first today.
So I guess first answer would be Eco Challenge. That's kind of the new thing that is popular and cool. And I thought, like, yeah, this looks great. This looks like a lot of fun. It throws in some of the aspects of triathlon, like mountain biking and spending time on the water. But then, like, I saw the distances that they do, and it's like I could throw together a little kayak out of sticks and paddle it for 100 yards down the river. But then I saw they do, like, 20 kilometers down the river. And I'm like, hold up, that's a long time. They're talking about, like, being on this little stick raft for 12 hours.
So what is the Eco Challenge? Like, when
so
you're talking about that?
It's a race. It's a point-to-point. It's in exotic locations, things like rainforest and different just very challenging environments, and you have to largely overcome all of these things. So it combines all sorts of different aspects, things like rock climbing, and it takes all the terrain into account in these very challenging.
So it's like
places.
A point-to-point traversing different types of terrain kind of event.
Yeah, and it's there are like multiple days, so you're on limited sleep. You're going through the night. It's extreme.
Well, I've never heard of the Eco Challenge.
So I want like the glamping version. I want like a 3 or 4 hour version where I don't have to sleep in a tent and like I don't get bug bites or anything like that. But I want to like go and like climb on some rocks and swim in the river. But
I feel like that kind of defeats the point, though.
Probably does. Yeah.
Elizabeth, what about you? What will your kind of race of choice be if it's non-triathlon, non-mainstream, something different and unique? What are you picking?
Well, John absolutely stole mine. Eco Challenge?
That's your answer too?
That is exactly what I was going
to
say.
I've never heard of this, and both of you guys are saying this.
Now, I do have to admit that I just recently heard about this, but since that time, I've already got my team established, and they've started training. So, I mean, big shout out here to Doug Silk, Charles Gerard, and oh my gosh, this is embarrassing. I don't even know his name, but the Air Force instructor that teaches land navigation.
This is like forgetting one of the Avengers if you're an Avenger like this.
Yeah, and that's pretty bad. I have not met him yet, but I'm excited, and kind of to that point, I'm also relieved that I don't have to be the navigator for my team. We've got an expert in that role, but yeah, I mean, already kind of have a team together. We've looked into this, and the endurance aspect and the long distances is an intriguing part for me. You know, I'd say it would sound to be like a little head-to-head competition there, but
Team Mayfield versus Team James on the same Eco Challenge race.
No, so I'm actually just now finding out that I was replaced
on this team.
Yeah, because my boy Doug was like, "Hey, come do this Eco Challenge race," and I was like,
"And now he's doing it with Elizabeth."
Yeah, but
we have like, some tried out drama up in here.
Maybe I'm second pick here. I don't know.
I'll just say good call. Like I don't blame him at all.
That was a smarter call. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Props.
Well, John, you might have had that idea first, but Elizabeth sounds like she's a little bit further further along in terms of preparing to actually be on the starting line of an Eco Challenge. So
I'm still waiting for the short version, the sprint version.
For me, the one I've always wanted to do is one of the Ragnar runs. And those are getting more and more well known, that the Ragnar relays, you know, they're usually, you know, 180, 200 miles, and you're on a team of people, you know, kind of working out of a van where, you know, over a 24-hour period or 48-hour period, you'll have three legs in a relay, and your first leg might be 6 miles, your next one might be 9 miles, and you have a couple hours in between each of your legs because there's so many people on your team taking a turn because you're running for 200 miles. And I don't know, those have always sounded really fun to me. I've always wanted to try one. I actually have a Ragnar branded hat that I found on sale at a bike shop. And in my head, I was like, oh, I want to try one of these. Let me go ahead and preemptively buy this hat so I can wear it when inevitably somebody invites me to do a Ragnar relay.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
When scouting race options for your next triathlon, there are plenty of races to choose from. You can do anything from a local sprint or Olympic race all the way up to a destination Ironman event. But have you ever stopped to ask yourself, based on your ability and experience, what should my next race actually be? Today, we will be talking with our coaches about properly progressing in our journey as triathletes. What is the optimal way to go from beginner to veteran or sprinter to Ironman? How can we know for sure we are ready to take on each distance? So let's kind of start just from where people normally are at the beginning of their tri journey, right? You're signing up for that first race. You don't know necessarily what it should be. What is the best distance for someone's first triathlon?
So I totally understand the purpose of this question, and to help give a more concrete answer, I'm going to say that my initial recommendation would be for athletes to begin with a sprint triathlon, with the caveat that, you know, every athlete is unique, their previous sport experience, current level of fitness, the availability of races, I mean, et cetera, all of those things are still important factors in this decision too. But for the majority of athletes that are getting started in the sport, you know, try putting, you know, pun intended there, all three sports together in a shorter distance event. You know, the time and financial commitment is going to be much more manageable than it would be for a longer distance event. I mean, see if you enjoy it before you make a mortgage payment or two or three on a time trial bike.
So I think something to consider is many athletes that come to triathlon may have a background or experience in one of the events, swim, bike, or
they
run.
They probably run.
They
might have been
fit.
On swim team. Yeah.
They may be, they may have done several years at the CrossFit or just at the gym, and they're kind of a fitness enthusiast and wanting to check out. So the sprint distance is a great opportunity to kind of utilize the background in swimming, cycling, running, or maybe just fitness. But there's not a huge reliance or need to be super proficient in those other two. Most athletes that come to triathlon don't have a swim background. And that's what actually keeps a lot of people out of triathlon is they can ride a bike, they can run, but they may not have that confidence in their swim, especially to go do an open water swim. So the sprint is a great opportunity for that. There are races that do have the pool sprints, pool swims, or if they are an open water swim, a lot of them are in smaller bodies of water. So less intimidating as opposed to say an Ironman that's out, in true open water. So there's that, there's less training needed. So it's a good introduction into the sport. Whereas, the sprint, you can train a couple hours a week and do very well. You're not so much worried about having the fitness or the stamina to finish the event as opposed to those longer distances. And then I think something else that's important to consider is it's a most sprint races are a very beginner-friendly field. There's going to be a large percentage of the participants that it's their first triathlon, whereas
or maybe the only one they do each and every year. They're very recreational at it. They're there on their entry-level road bike. I get what you're saying.
So as you increase in distance, as a rule, you're going to see fewer and fewer first timers in that as well. So again, you're going to have a whole lot of first timers in your sprint distance races. You're going to have very few first timers at your Ironman. So you're not going to be the only one out there that's kind of figuring things out. So there's just kind of comfort in that, in knowing that there's other first timers, other beginners in that. And a lot of times people come in with a group. That's how I did my first is there was a whole group of buddies and none of us had ever done triathlon, and one guy said, let's do it. And we were all like, yeah, that sounds okay. and we did.
Why not?
Yeah, exactly. And so that's how I got into it. And there was something in the water that bit me and been coming back ever since. And so yeah, it's just a good opportunity to start there.
That wasn't literal, people. That was metaphorical.
Well, both.
There is a crowd out there that just wants to dive into an Ironman, right? Whether they saw an ad or whether they just love taking on sick challenges. There's people out there that just jump straight into, I'm not going to do a sprint. I'm not going to do an Olympic. Maybe they never even heard of that. And they just know what Ironman is and they want to do it. They wake up one day, they want a new challenge. What would you guys say to that crowd? The person that just wants to step in and go all out 140.6 miles Ironman event.
I mean, is it doable? Yes. Would I recommend it? No, I wouldn't. We're triathletes and, you know, we can handle great challenges. It happens probably fairly frequently. I actually currently coach an athlete that did a full Ironman as their first ever triathlon. You can certainly prepare yourself well to tackle the distance of a full Ironman event as your first try. But I do believe that there is great value in the experience of previous race events. So, you know, if those previous race event experiences aren't part of the plan, then I would strongly advise working closely with a coach and or a mentor so they can provide some of that wisdom and experience during those preparations.
So something you'll see at all of the Ironman briefings where they have these meetings leading into the race, they'll say, who's here first time Ironman? And you'll see lots of hands go up. And then the follow-up question inevitably is, who's first triathlon? And there's always one or two. And of course, it's, you know, those are the folks that kind of get the good luck.
Everybody looks, everybody laughs, everybody smirks.
Yeah, so they're out there. And you know, it's certainly possible. Is it the best route? Maybe, maybe not. There's certainly advantages to working your way up in the distances, but it is possible. One thing you mentioned is hopping on your mountain bike and going and doing the local sprint race. It's going to be a very, very long day if you hop on your Walmart branded or Walmart bought mountain bike go try to ride 112 miles.
Yeah.
There are certain things you have to do when racing Ironman. But to a certain extent, I think Ironman is largely unique in its distance. So it's much more about having the stamina and building the stamina and going and executing that stamina. Whereas if you're really going to be competitive in a sprint race, your transition times are critical. It's completely feasible to win and lose a race based on your transitions. And this is where you have to work on things like your flying mount, flying dismount, where seconds truly matter. You're running in shoes without socks because you don't have time to put on socks. Because if you put on socks, you go from first place to fourth place just by that. Ironman is different in that, so that things, some of these technical aspects aren't quite as important, especially for the vast majority of the athletes that are out there racing. So you may have longer transitions. So being very precise, very proficient in transition is not as important when racing Ironman as opposed to racing, say, a sprint race, or even some of the technical aspects of you know, being able to corner and shave seconds off the bike course because you're hitting the corners at a fast pace as opposed to that. So there are some of the technical aspects of racing short course that you don't necessarily have to have when racing Ironman. And a lot of those come with experience. Those are some of those things you just have to oftentimes learn by doing. But as Elizabeth mentioned, there are critical components to racing Ironman, things like nutrition, that are very difficult to kind of figure out on your own and very easy to botch. But that's where an experienced coach or an experienced group, working with experienced athletes that can guide you through that and help with that learning curve, that learning process. I think it'd be very difficult to totally go at it on your own. There's a lot of great resources, but there's a lot to learn that come along the way, but it's certainly feasible to do.
I think back to even just my first couple triathlons and the way my legs felt by the time I got on the run. If I was encountering that during an Ironman for the first time, you know, you kind of know what to expect when you've gone through that feeling at shorter distances and you've been able to tough it out at those shorter distances. But I can't imagine your first crack at running off the bike being, I now have to run a marathon off the bike. But that's just me. So I know for me personally as a triathlete, you know, I started with a sprint. I did three sprints in my first season as a triathlete. And then I slowly kind of started working in, okay, the next season I did two sprints in an Olympic. And then my decision for when to try a half Ironman was, okay, I'm about to turn 30. It'd be really cool to do a half Ironman for my 30th birthday. So I found one that was the day before my 30th birthday. So I ended my 20s doing my first ever half Ironman. But other than that, I never really personally had a rhyme or reason why I was choosing to go up to the next distance. When it comes to an Ironman, I kind of had a personal goal of, okay, my first Ironman, I want to go sub 12. And I'm not going to sign up for an Ironman until I feel like I'm ready to potentially, maybe, hopefully, possibly go sub 12. But for all the other distances, I just kind of, sure, I'll try an Olympic. How many times should we race a certain distance before, you know, we can know confidently we're ready for the next distance?
Three. No, I'm totally just kidding.
Across the board, no matter what, it's three.
Three
Do
times.
Three and move on.
Yeah. And I mean, just get in there, but I said that cause I don't know that it's necessarily a specific number of times that you need to race a particular distance before progressing. There's a lot of things to consider, you know, one of those being, what are your goals within the sport? And I mean, Andrew, you kind of just talked about this too, where, you know, before signing up for that Ironman, you wanted to be able to go sub 12. So I think one of the things that athletes really need to reflect on is, what is going to bring you as the athlete the most fulfillment in the sport and possibly that next distance progression? You know, is it your want to complete an Ironman by your 40th birthday? Do you want to be on the podium in the local sprint events? You know, do you want to go to the Olympics one day? Your personal goals within the sport are likely going to be a driving factor in helping answer this question about when you're ready to progress to a different distance. I know for me, after crossing the first triathlon finish line, which was a sprint distance event, I automatically had this four-year plan.
That, of course you did.
Oh, yep, exactly.
That's so on brand for Elizabeth James.
I knew at that point I was going to do my first Ironman in 2015. And so I progressed in distance each year. I said, okay, you know, sprints one summer, Olympic distance the next. The next summer I was going to focus on 70.3 events. And then 2015 was going to be Ironman Wisconsin. So my goals during that four-year time period were very focused on kind of learning the sport, progressing in distance each year. But kind of after that, I mean, after racing Ironman in 2015, I didn't race that full distance again until 2017. So I kind of took a step back in race distance, and I wanted to take some time to build my speed, my strength, to be able to race
out,
faster.
You tasted the distance. You knew you could finish it. And now it's, okay, let's get good at that distance.
Yes. Yeah. Like, I want to race faster. I want to race more competitively when I return to this distance again. I mean, I raced Kona in 2018, but it's going to be 2021 or 2022 before I race that distance again. And, you know, one thing to consider here as we're talking about progressing up in distance is, does a longer distance even intrigue me? Am I going to enjoy the training and preparations necessary to increase my stamina for that longer distance event?
Yeah, I swore up and down that I would never do an Ironman. Like, I was mm-hmm. I like a half. That feels great. I feel accomplished at that distance. I don't want to run a marathon. I've never run a marathon. I still haven't run a marathon. My first marathon will be in Ironman, Texas in 2021, because I think that kind of distance is stupid. So I'm still not really entirely. Actually, I can't tell you what it was. It was reading Mike Riley's book, Finding My Voice, and I just read the stories that he was sharing about people who finished an Ironman distance, and I was like, oh my gosh, I have to do at least one of these to kind of round out the resume. But that's the way I felt. And until then, I didn't really have a purpose or a reason to do that distance. And some people might not.
Yeah. And it's not like, you know, you're graduating from one to the other. I mean, each race is unique. And so if you never go and do that, then that's perfectly acceptable as well.
So to answer the question of how many times you need to race to move on to the next, it's an answer I give for a lot of things. And I will say my answer is as many times as it takes you to be proficient in one. It's one of those things where you're not really setting yourself up for success by increasing distance if you haven't not mastered, but at least been proficient.
If you bomb your sprint and just about bonk and are crawling yourself to the finish line, don't try an Olympic.
Olympic's
going to
be rough. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think you're going to enjoy the Olympic distance race, and certainly not going there from the half to the full. So I give that answer a lot. How many open water swims do I need to do before my race? As many as you need to be proficient. How much time do I need to spend riding out on the road as opposed to my trainer? As much time as you need to be proficient. And it's going to be different for everyone. I've learned is that there's a half-life on that. It largely expires. So a couple of weeks ago, I went and raced my first sprint race in a number of years. I've done more Ironman in the last 2 years than I've done sprint races. And sprints is kind of my go-to. And it's something we've kind of talked about is it's not all about just getting to Ironman. Ironman is a fantastic experience. It's unique. For me, Ironman is something, I get something from racing Ironman that I just don't at these other distances. But I will say that I am probably the best at racing sprint. That is kind of my wheelhouse. I'm most successful in that. So for me, I looked forward to getting back to racing sprints. And I was kind of schooled that I was not as proficient as I thought. And I thought I would just go back out there and I've done this. I've been successful at it. I know it. But after 5 years of not really being competitive in the sprint distance racing, I did not do nearly as well as I thought I would or as I'd hoped. And a lot of it had to do with just kind of being kind of rusty. And so
people glorify the Ironman, but I mean, there's a whole different type of pain in going all out, just wall to wall. Heart rate is just maxed out the whole time for a sprint.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, for me, what I realized is I need to go and I need to do a few. And that's what I used to do back in, I would race several times within the summer. I may race 4, 5, 6 sprint races within, June, July. And I know within there, I'd have a couple good races. I'd have one or two bad, but you know, they each built on the other and, to just kind of come back. And yeah, I was not as proficient as I needed to be to achieve the goal that I had set. So now that I still have that same goal, I know it's going to perhaps take me a couple races to go out. And every year it was like that too. I almost feel like every season I start over as a newbie, because we have this season and then we have these long breaks in between where we haven't done a triathlon in many months. Oftentimes it's 6, 7, 8 months from our first triathlon from the first year to the end of the previous season. And you lose a lot of that experience.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like almost starting over every year. So there's a certain bit of that. And know that as you progress throughout the season, even you'll kind of get some of those skills back. You'll remember what it's like to be out there. You'll remember the importance of hydration and nutrition and all those different things that so year after year we improve, but even throughout the season, there's that progression as well.
So as athletes are taking that great sage John Mayfield advice and progressing when they feel ready to and have kind of shown themselves to be proficient at the shorter distances. Tell me this, does the background of an athlete and kind of their level of fitness play a role in how quickly they can probably progress? Like, for example, if someone comes into the sport of triathlon and they're an experienced marathoner, would they be more likely to progress faster in distance than somebody who maybe has dabbled in a few 5Ks?
Absolutely. So there's just a natural propensity for that. So obviously a big part of that is physical ability. So whether someone has that aerobic or anaerobic engine built, they have that injury predisposition already largely addressed. So someone that's been running marathons for a number of years, their body is used to that that pounding, that high volume. They're used to logging all those miles, all those weeks. So they've already, and it's not that their body's just used to it. It's just their body has adapted to that. They've built, the muscular structure, the bone structure, all that to absorb that training load. And so that's what we're looking to do as we progress in these distances is prepare the body, prepare, there's a lot of preparation, but one of the very important things is preparing the body for that additional training load, additional racing load. For example, a lot of times your swimmers, if you come from a swim background, swam in high school, swim in college, the vast majority of swimmers swim what we would consider very short distances. You know, you may be a 100, 200, 400. That's sprint distance racing. So those are going to do very well in those short distances. So same thing like if you come from a cycling background, it's different if you're racing crits versus racing road racing, or if you're a track athlete. In high school, college, or afterwards? Or are you racing 5Ks on a regular basis, or are you racing marathons? That's going to kind of determine where you start.
What you're already naturally good at.
And then how well, how quickly you're going to be able to progress from there. And that's all from the physical standpoint. But from there, there's also things like mental skills. A experienced marathoner is going to have a better propensity to go race these long races because they're used to going out there. They're used to being uncomfortable for long periods of time, as opposed to say someone that swam the 100 in school. They went hard for 1 minute.
They're used to being extremely uncomfortable for a short duration, as opposed to being a little uncomfortable for a long time.
Exactly, yeah. And that's going to just take time to learn. But then even things like time management. So whereas you get in your training, how do you fit this new lifestyle, this new activity into your family, your work, all of that, and then the cost as well. So there's things that we've talked about that. So there's obviously the physical is a very important component to this, but that's not everything. There's other things to consider as well.
So when we go to make the jump to long course, and I think that a lot of athletes, again, that for a lot of folks, that's their end goal, right? Whether it's a half Ironman, an Ironman, you know, people want to get to that. When we make that jump to long course, 70.3, 140.6, is there any wisdom in using short course races, whether it's a sprint or an Olympic, as kind of tune-up events in the months preceding those longer races?
I think that there can be great value in shorter course events as long as they are strategically placed within the training calendar and entered into with a purpose. So for example, an athlete may use a shorter course event to practice their transitions or as a high intensity weekend workout session. I mean, John was just talking a little bit ago about, you know, that progression throughout the season and the experience and the lessons that we learn from those other races and how they can be beneficial for races later on. So yes, I mean, there's great value there. The main thing though, that we would want to avoid with some of these shorter distance events during that race preparation phase for a 70.3 or 140.6 event is that we don't want them to interfere with the necessary increase in stamina that must be built prior to the longer course race day. This is kind of a somewhat extreme example, but I've seen it, I've heard about it, and I think there's quite a few athletes that do themselves a disservice by racing short course events very frequently leading into their longer course race. And by doing so, they're missing those long rides. They're missing those long run sessions.
And they probably think they're getting, oh, I'm getting race experience. I'm knocking off the rust. I'm priming my muscles. I'm, yeah.
When, I mean, truly they're missing some very key training sessions there. So I usually encourage athletes to race some of those shorter course events when the duration of the event would be similar to what would have been planned for kind of that weekend training session.
So something we see very common, very frequently, and it's really, I would say, even encouraged by Ironman, is doing the half distance race 3 to 4 weeks out from the Ironman event.
Yeah.
And oftentimes what we'll see is that the same venue will host a half distance race 3 to 4 weeks from the full. And so
like
a lot of people
70.3 Arizona will be 4 weeks on the calendar before 140.6 on the same course in Arizona.
So,
yeah.
So people on the surface say, hey, this is a great opportunity for me to go and experience the course and I can test my fitness. And there's some wisdom in that. And there are advantages of going and seeing the venue, not just the race course, but the city and the lodging and the logistics of being in town. But the problem with racing a half distance race 3 to 4 weeks out from Ironman is really the opportunity cost. So you have a certain amount of time to prepare for this race. And the closer you get to race, the more valuable those training weeks, especially those training weekends, become. So oftentimes on the weekend, we're getting in the long rides, the long runs, and 3 to 4 weeks out, those are critical. Trotted athletes are prescribed their race rehearsals 2 weeks out and 4 weeks out. And so sometimes we'll see that athletes want to use one of these half distance races as that race rehearsal, but there's very big difference in riding 56 miles and 112 miles. Huge difference in running off a 56 mile bike versus 112 mile bike. So, it's on the surface or kind of at first glance, it can be a good opportunity, but really what we see here is it's a very large time cost. So what we'll typically see is the athletes will taper for about a week, which
for that 70.3.
For the 70.3. Yep. It obviously takes all weekend to do that. So you're not going to race one day and then get a long session in the next day. So that's going to be kind of your focus for the week.
And then you're recovering.
And then you're going to be recovering for at least a couple days. So for most athletes, the cost of that 70.3 is somewhere of 7 to 10 to 14 days. And those days are very valuable training days and need to really be focused on that full distance event, where you're getting some value in that training, but it's not necessarily a direct correlation to what you're going to be doing on race day. So what we want to really be doing in those time periods is dialing in the stamina, but also things like nutrition and hydration. And your hydration in a 56-mile bike is going to be different than a 112-mile bike. And what may be working well in 56 miles may not work at 112. So we want to make sure that we're doing that. So I would say especially for the first timers, those are going to be very valuable training weeks. So I would say, or I would advise for the first timers not to do the 70.3. Now, someone that's more experienced, I would say that there may be less of a cost of doing that. But really, ideally, you would work in these half distance races somewhere further out. So like 8 to 10 weeks where your training volume is matching those distances, where your long rides are somewhere in that 56
mile.
You may
not be on the exact same course, but if you wanted to do a 70.3 in the buildup, that's when you
should. And it's a great opportunity to kind of double up on the fitness. And that's kind of the thing too, is you're putting a lot of work into one race day. And I get to the desire to want to kind of milk that fitness, milk that training for more than just one day. So do that 8 to 10 weeks out when the training volume is matching that. Whereas, you know, it's going to be a dip because, you know, you're not doing 56 mile bikes 2 to 3 weeks out.
You're doing more than that.
Exactly. Yeah. So do them further out when it's appropriate, when you're there. There's going to be much less of a cost of doing that half distance race 8 to 10 weeks out, as opposed to looking at it 3 to 4 weeks out.
Well, especially when, particularly with tried out at the races events, or even just traveling to that full Ironman site a couple days before and driving the bike course, you can get most of the pros without having done that 70.3 4 weeks prior.
Yeah, I'm a big advocate. If it's possible, if it's feasible, go to the race the year before. Volunteering is a great way to kind of get some race day karma and contribute back. and kind of, you know, make a contribution before you go and take the next year. I'm a big fan of that. And I've learned an incredible amount by doing that. And so you, even for me, as I've prepared for races a year out, as I did my training sessions, I kind of had it in my mind, that mind's eye of what that race looks like, as opposed to just going in and having no idea as to what to expect. I've done both, and I have a lot more confidence. I feel better.
Yeah.
My mental game is better when I can visualize. So go and do that, volunteer a year out, and then you'll kind of have that benefit. And as you mentioned, we were there on site leading into the race. We definitely advocate for going and checking out the course, days prior. So there are means other than racing that 70.3, 3 to 4 weeks out to check out the course.
So the biggest jump, is to the Ironman distance. Cause even if you've done a 70.3 before your first Ironman, you are doubling that distance on your first Ironman day. So what are the signs that we are ready or maybe not quite ready for a 140.6?
Signing up for an Ironman is so much more than just the physical readiness to train for a 1.2-mile swim, 112 on the bike, and the marathon run. I mean, certainly the physical preparations and the readiness to handle that higher training load is important. But it's also going to require, you know, commitment, preparation, and an investment of time in that training that you are going to do to physically prepare yourself. So a couple things that come to my mind that I would ask athletes are you ready to commit the time necessary for the preparations? You know, do you have good time management skills to schedule those necessary training sessions into your current lifestyle? Are you willing and able to make the financial commitment to the event where, I mean, an Ironman registration fee is nearly $1,000, which, I mean, truly in the end may be one of the cheaper parts of actually racing a full. And then, you know, do you have support of those around you for this large undertaking? You know, it's not necessary to have somebody else on board, but it does make a huge difference. And I think taking the time to provide an honest assessment to these criteria is important to determine if you're ready to sign up for a full, because everybody's going to think about, okay, the physical part and the training, but those are some things beyond the physical preparations that I also think are very important.
They talk about how it can take a village to raise a child. It almost mm-hmm. takes a village to get an Ironman finish line.
Yeah, 100%.
That's especially true. And I think one thing that... That may not be, it's obvious, but maybe not as much as it should be, is getting the buy-in of the family. I think that's something that's critical, and making sure they know and understand everything that's going to go into this, because it is a large time investment, and it's not just the time on the road. You can look at a training plan and see, you know, I'm going to peak at maybe 15 hours of training. I'm going to peak at 5 hours of cycling and 2 or 3 hours of running, but there's a lot more to it than that. There's the recovery aspect. There's all that. When you go out and you do a 5 hour bike ride in the summer heat and do a run off,
you're done for the day.
You're done. That's not 5.5
you're
hours.
You're not going to help with dishes or laundry. Yeah. When you're
that's 24 hours. You know, you go and you do that. Chances are, you know, you're going to be pretty trashed. And so your ability to go and spend quality time with the family, do quality chores around the house, that's going to be greatly diminished. And I think you're really setting yourself up for success if your family and your support system is aware of that and they're willing to pick up the slack. So I think that's one thing that was definitely a lesson I kind of learned the hard way.
Yeah.
Was that just making sure that you have that support, you have that village, and not only do you have the support, but your village is kind of educated and knows what's going into this. And I think it's going to be an overall better experience when everyone is aware and then everyone's on board.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm an example of an athlete who picks up minor injuries, aches and pains, things that take you out of your training, you know, rhythm for a week or two here and there, real easy. And so when I started training for Ironman Texas much earlier in the year before it got coronated, I was having to spend some extra hours making sure I'm rolling my feet on a roller to keep my little foot bones and muscles happy. I was having to make sure I was staying on top of my stretching more so than when I'm just day-to-day training for sprints and Olympics. You know, I was having to spend those extra hours that aren't on the calendar just to make sure my body was ready to absorb the training to get me ready for race day. And whether you're more injury, you know, more injury prone like I am or not, that time is going to be there. And you have to be ready for that. And it's not just, I think you said it earlier, Elizabeth, that you have to be ready for that time commitment, because it's more than just the training. And it's analyzing, am I ready for everything that goes into training for an Ironman? And if not, you know, there's nothing wrong with staying at distances a little bit shorter until you're really ready to go all in on doing an Ironman. So
I think the more people in your circle, so to speak, the more important that is. So I would say the person that's single, no kids, you know, you've got a lot more flexibility. You know, you're pretty much 100% in control of your schedule.
Yeah.
But then, you know, as you start to add a spouse or partner, and then you start adding kids and all that, you know, your responsibilities kind of add up, and kind of your flexibility and your ability to totally control your schedule are diminished. So I would, from personal experience, I would encourage everyone to really take those things into consideration and really evaluate what is my availability, what is my commitment. And you know, honestly too, I mean, there's a chance you're going to miss out on some things. And are you willing you're going to have to sacrifice something. Are you going to miss a soccer game? Or are you going to miss a training session? And there may be a balance of that, and you simply cannot miss every training session every weekend.
Yeah.
And that would be one of those signs that you're not ready, to bump up in distance. So, if you're willing to miss the occasional soccer game, then, you know, okay. If you're willing to miss the occasional training session, okay, we can work around that. But if they're mutually exclusive where you can't miss any of either, then that would be one of those signs where you're not quite ready. And you know, especially like with kids, that's something for me. My kids were small when I started racing Ironman. Now my kids are junior high school age. I've got a lot more flexibility now. You know, my kids are involved in school activities, which are much more Monday through Friday. So I don't have a lot of those weekend conflicts that I did have when they were doing more like community sports and that sort of thing that were very weekend dominant. So, you know, for some, you know, it may be, if you don't have kids yet, it's a great opportunity to do that, because your life is going to change when those kids come along. Or if you have the young kids, I will say that those weekends are very valuable. And maybe it's just putting off for a couple of years until they are more involved in the school, or maybe it's waiting till the kids move on and move on out of the house and, freeze up time that way. So again, just make that consideration. And that's one of the things I've learned really from experience, both personal and working with other athletes, is, I think that's one of the most important, decisions in this and most important aspects, is making sure, that village, that community is on board and they're part of this as well.
I think to that point too, we can encourage the parents out there, when your kid leaves for college or their young adult life and their bedroom, it's now your pain cave. Don't keep their bed in there. Don't keep the curtains in their dresser in there. All right. Sure, they're going to come home on holidays. They can sleep on the couch. That is now your pain cave, mom and dad. You earned it.
That's a great advice. I mean, right now, my trainer is out in the garage. It is hot. I need a kid to move on so I can bring all that stuff indoors.
Yeah, I think from this whole conversation, I love the mindset that you guys have given me, and hopefully our athletes listening, that, you know, at the point you're stepping up to that 70.3, that 140.6, you know, it's not just asking yourself, are you physically ready for this stage? It's also asking yourself, does your schedule, does your lifestyle, does your family obligations, you know, do those things fit the training and recovery and prehab load that it takes to do those events? And that is a great question for athletes to ask themselves, that I'm sure it wasn't in my head signing up for my first Ironman. And now I have that perspective, and I hope a lot of people really grasp that. But tell me this, is it okay to never make the jump to long course racing? If an athlete out there just looks at the 70.3, looks at the 140.6, looks at the 15-hour training weeks and the long miles and says, you know what? No, thank you. Is it okay to never make that jump as a triathlete?
It is absolutely okay. Every distance has its own challenges. And I mean, I like to think of it this way. Nobody thinks that the Olympic sprinters aren't true athletes just because their event is shorter.
Oh, Usain Bolt, you haven't run a marathon? Lame.
Only 100
right.
meters.
Yeah, like, I mean, gosh. I mean, personally, I don't like the sprint distance. I dread 5K races, the 1 mile time trials.
We're so different,
Elizabeth.
No,
thank you. Yeah. Like, I would much rather race Ironman. But I mean, like you guys and some of my other training partners, they have that raw speed to just dominate in the shorter distance events. And they have the opposite opinion that I do. You know, they don't have the desire to go do 5-hour bike rides and go run for 3 hours. They thrive in those shorter distance events. And I think this is another fantastic thing about the sport of triathlon, the variety of distances that are available to athletes. We're all triathletes. You're not any less of a triathlete if you choose to only race shorter course events.
So yeah, I mentioned before, I love sprints. I'm good at them, and I've never felt like less of a triathlete because I've been most successful in the sprint distance racing. I've never finished a sprint distance race and felt any less accomplished. Now, as I mentioned before, there's just something special about going longer. I think it's a unique, unique experience. But you know, the Olympics, which you know is the greatest athletes in the world coming together. They don't race the Ironman distance. Now, I think it'd be kind of cool if they did, but I don't think the
then
TV
they
ratings.
Call it an Olympic.
Well, the live TV coverage would probably not appreciate that. So, and that's really why the Olympic distance was created, was because of that. But you know, those guys are insane athletes that are going out, and they're racing for less than 2 hours. So as Elizabeth mentioned, every distance is unique, has its own set of challenges, its own rewards. So there is no right or wrong distance.
So guys, the training to take on races of each distance is just obviously so different. Like for me, when I think back to the training for my first half Ironman, it was very different than the training it took for my first sprint. What differences can we expect in our training as we start to prep for races of different distances?
So short course racing obviously is going to have a focus on building speed. Typically, your training is going to be sufficient that you don't necessarily have to focus on enough training volume, enough stamina so that you can finish the race. These sprint and Olympic distance races, typically anyone who is in good enough shape to go in race is going to have the endurance to be able to finish a sprint or an Olympic distance race as a rule. Obviously, when we shift over to focusing on 70.3 and Ironman, we have to shift training focus into building stamina to be able to complete that distance. But an important distinction here is that when we're racing these longer course races, the training is, I think oftentimes, kind of the natural expectation is it's a long race, so I need to do lots of high volume training for a long time. The race intensity is lower, so the training needs to be at a lower intensity, and that's a very common kind of myth that exists in the triathlon space. But what we've been able to prove and demonstrate over and over is the saying of fast before far and strong before long. So what we really want to do is focus on building as much speed as possible before we go and focus on increasing that stamina. So that's kind of a long-term training approach that we want to get fast before we increase the race distance, but also in the training phase, in the training season. That's also integrated in as well. So in the time that we have available, we want to make as much gain in speed and power and efficiency as possible, and then add the stamina. So what takes a long time to build or longer to build are those increases in speed and power. What comes relatively quickly and largely kind of easily are those increases in stamina. So that's where that saying comes from: fast before far, strong before long.
Gotcha.
And I mean, just to kind of chime in here, I had mentioned earlier that I took a significant amount of time, about a year and a half between my first and second full Ironman events. And that was because I wanted to race faster and race more competitively. And when I raced Ironman Texas for my second full, I dropped 3 hours off of my Ironman Wisconsin finishing time.
3 hours?
Yeah.
In a year and a half time?
3 hours.
Sheesh. Sign me up for that training plan. Oh, wait, it's TriDot.
Yeah. You're good to go. So I didn't get faster at Ironman by racing Ironman. I greatly improved my race finishing times by focusing on increasing my threshold in each discipline.
Yeah, it really takes me back to episode 10 of the podcast, the power stamina paradox. And that we quote that one so often because it's such a foundational episode to the way we do training design at TriDot. And the fact that you do work on getting faster throughout the year, and then once you start getting closer to that race event, that's when the stamina work and endurance work really kicks in, because you improve your stamina and endurance just by working out longer and longer, you know, each time. But the speed it takes all those sessions of you know, pushing your body at threshold and going faster and faster and faster to work on the speed. So we got to do that farther out from race day. So if you want to hear kind of the training approach that helped Elizabeth, you know, knock 3 hours, you know, off her Ironman time over the course of a year and a half, go back and listen to episode 10 and hear TriDot founder Jeff Buer talk about the power stamina paradox and why we do training design and the way we do it.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
In this wild 2020 year, there are a number of multi-sport companies and organizations that have done a great job keeping athletes engaged even with fewer races. Some athletes have stayed motivated through their connection to TriDot or their local tri club, while others have enjoyed virtual racing. USA Triathlon recently had a super cool event called the Virtual Tri Across America, where tri clubs could kind of form a team. They could connect their training device and race 3,312 miles across the United States. TriDot athlete Greg Goolsby stepped up to the plate and created a team for TriDot called the TriDot Train, and we were off to the races. I'm happy to have Greg with me today to talk about how it happened, how it went, and even how we were able to benefit charity through our participation. So Greg, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
So Greg, you are actually a board member for the USA Triathlon Foundation, so you are well aware of the Tri Across America Challenge. What kind of sparked the idea to create a TriDot team, and how did we do?
I'm on the board of trustees for the foundation. I'm actually the treasurer there. And a little bit about me. I'm a veteran of our sport. I go back about 38 years in the sport now. So I've been around the block a few times. The foundation for me when I joined about a year ago now is a way for me to give back to the sport. It's a great organization. It basically is dedicated to three major platforms, and they're kind of the three pillars, we call them. First, supporting young athletes or youth engagement, the paratriathlete program, and also for Olympic hopefuls. But most of all, we want to encourage our kids to lead healthy and active lifestyles through swimming and running. So that's really the whole effort behind the actual event, Triathlon Across America. It came about from former Major League Baseball player Eric Burns. He played for a number of teams and retired about 10 years ago. But he noticed that there were a lot of kids that were becoming more and more sedentary and sitting in front of screens for 7, 8, 9 hours. And now with the pandemic, obviously that's become even more so. They're out of the classroom in a lot of cases.
Yeah, absolutely.
Screen time. So at the same time, schools have been cutting back on physical ed programs and youth activity. I think we can safely say it's at an all-time low right now. So Eric decided that rather than telling kids about becoming more active, he decided to show them. So he actually did his own Triathlon Across America, and there's a great video that we shared a clip with the TriDot team, and that's really encapsulates what Eric did. But he actually did this event where he swam, biked, and ran literally all the way across the country from San Francisco to New York City. So
wow,
great accomplishment. But getting to the foundation, our board of trustees decided to hold a bit of a competition. So each member developed their own team, and the idea was to have, even though it's not billed as a race, it became a little bit of a race and a little bit of a competition to not only race across the country, but to raise money for the foundation.
Naturally, we're going to turn everything into a competition as triathletes, right?
Exactly. But with my involvement with TriDot, I thought, well, you know, this is a perfect group for a virtual event. Everybody's already, they have devices, they're uploading data to the platform. So they've got their Garmin accounts or whatever platform they're using. So it's just a simple matter. Well, let's just connect that to Fit Rankings in addition, which is the platform that the Virtual Tri Across America was using. And so there we go. And so I said, well, you know what, I'm just going to throw it out in the Facebook group and see what happens. And so I put a posting, thank you guys for approving it, because I wasn't sure if you might throw me out or not, but the leadership there supported it. And I thought, well, you know, maybe I can get 15 or 20 folks to jump on board, what I call the Tri-Dot train. Well, the response was astounding. Quickly 15 became 20, became 40. It just grew exponentially. And people were all over it. I was just blown away, and we quickly became the number one team. In fact, I got a lot of heat from some of my colleagues about, you know, really 180 people on your team. How fair is that? So, but there were no limitations on team size. So
yeah, absolutely.
There was no, and it was all about having fun. At the end of the day, it was all about getting more people involved. So I think we fit the parameters there quite well. Well, the event got underway on October 15th, and sure enough, we made the crossing from San Francisco to New York City in 36 hours.
Wow.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. In fact, we were the number one team in terms of size, and we were in New York City before the second place team even got out of California. That's how fast.
Wow.
We were. So amazing.
So as you said, you know, with just over 180 athletes on our team, you know, we absolutely dominated. It was over so quickly. So you kind of decided to keep the fun going along with some of our other tryout athletes. You know, you created a map around the world and kind of turned our virtual try across the country into a virtual try around the world. Tell me how that idea came to be and how did the journey go?
Yeah. So as I was thinking about it in the early days before the race even started, I knew that 3,300 miles with 180 people, that was likely to go pretty fast. I figured a day or two. So it was pretty close to the estimate. And I thought, well, that's not going to be any fun, you know, a day and a half or 2 days and we're done. Let's have some fun with it. You know, we're such a big team. So we decided to expand it to conquer the world, as we said. So we took off from New York City, and I had three colleagues from Tri-Dot from the train that jumped on and helped me out. I couldn't have done it without them. Honestly, I was quickly overwhelmed just by questions, but it was fun. But I did have some help from three colleagues from Nicole, who was our navigator, from Michelle, who was our communicator. She sent out nightly updates, and then Jillian helped with our fundraising effort. So they were instrumental in getting this thing going and keeping it going with a little bit of guidance from me. But we took off from New York City. We kind of took a circuitous route around the world. We went up through Canada, across the ocean, across to Portugal and back up through Europe. And along the way, we were hitting different courses, Ironman courses or Challenge Roth, and different places that were cool bucket list type destinations.
Yeah.
Back down through Africa, down through the tropics and then down to Australia and New Zealand, and then back up through Kona, and then all the way back around to San Francisco. We covered over 53,000 miles as a team. Incredible. I mean, if you look at the circumference of the world, is 25,000 miles. So we pedaled and biked and swam twice around the world, if you think
yeah.
in technical terms. So amazing accomplishment by this this great group of Tri-Dot athletes.
Well, and logging the miles as a team was obviously great. You know, dominating the field was equally great. You know, but the best part of the whole thing is the way you were able to use this event to raise money for the USA Triathlon Foundation. How much were we able to raise as a team, and what do those funds kind of go towards?
Well, the donation page right now shows about $2,500, but we have a few hundred dollars more coming in matching donations from people that work with corporations that do match for charitable gifts. So with that, and then we also have at least 50 people I know of that bought the finisher medal packages. So that's a additional fundraising. So it's safe to say we're well over $3,000 and funds that are raised for the foundation. And in our case, we've decided to earmark those funds for youth engagement. And there's some exciting stuff that USAT is working on right now to engage youth and get more kids into our sport. You know, that's in all of our best interest, and including our kids, to get them more active. But this money is going to go for a great cause to help fund some of these initiatives that we want to get underway and get kids active.
Yeah, well, just a big shout out to all of our listeners and athletes who participated, on the TriDot train. All of our team members, a big thank you to those who donated towards the USAT Foundation. And Greg, a big thanks to you for just kind of organizing it. And, even though it was a short-lived challenge, that you made a slightly longer-lived challenge, thanks so much for kind of organizing and giving us all something fun to do for a couple of days.
Yeah, my pleasure. And I'll second that thanks to all of our donors. The donation page is still open. So for anybody that still wants to donate that hasn't, please go to our page. Appreciate that. And what a great community TriDot is. I thoroughly enjoy the engagement. I mean, the level of enthusiasm amongst the participants and all the people on the TriDot community, it's simply fantastic. Thank you. Thanks for providing the platform.
Well, that's it for today, folks. I want to thank coaches John Mayfield and Elizabeth James for talking us through racing different distances. Shout out to TriBike Transport for partnering with us on today's episode. Head to tribiketransport.com to book transport for your bike for your next race. Enjoying the podcast? Have any topics or questions you want to hear us talk about? Head to tridot.com/podcast to let us know what you're thinking. We'll do it all again soon. Until then, happy training.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize